The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Lara Croft Tomb Raider from 2001. If you do not wish to have this movie spoilt, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a good adaptation of its source material, or should it have been left buried in a tomb? We watched Lara Croft Tomb Raider from 2001 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after this theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy?
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project, where we are going to be discussing the Lara Croft Tomb Raider movie from 2001, as suggested by me, Trevor Holland, and I made my good friend
Christian Fletcher, who didn't suggest it and probably never would, to review this movie or try and redeem it. Sorry, I'm even finishing your sentences now.
That's all good. I kind of left that hanging for you, I must admit. So I'm glad you picked it up.
I was waiting for a different intro, so yeah, sorry for the silence.
I know, I changed it. Bad me.
Keep things fresh.
All good. So yeah, we watched Lara Croft Tomb Raider from 2001. I am going to use the full title in order to differentiate it from the recently released blockbuster of a very similar name. And if you haven't seen Lara Croft Tomb Raider from 2001, I have a synopsis here for you. Ready? Video game adventurer Lara Croft comes to life in a movie where she races against time and villains to recover powerful ancient artifacts.
Yeah, well, that pretty much sums it up. I was going to say in a nutshell, but in a tomb.
Yeah,
perhaps
sarcophagus. I don't know. We can make all sorts of tomb jokes, couldn't we? And we probably will. That's fair.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm already trying to think of the puns. You know, I'll have to jot some down to bring up.
Well, I think we just see what we can excavate.
Oh, okay. Maybe this just died in the water.
Oh boy. Okay. I think we should move on very, very quickly. So yeah, Lara Croft, Tomb Raider came out in 2001. Now, to give you an idea of, I suppose, its reception, it's definitely got a mixed reception. I think that really shows from the awards pages for this one. The Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy and Horror Films nominated it for Best Science Fiction Film and Best Actress for Angelina Jolie. It got nominated for Favorite Female Action Hero in the Kids' Choice Awards. The Motion Picture Sound Editors, it got nominated for Best Sound Editing, Best Female Performance and Best Fight for Angelina versus the Robot for the MTV Movie and TV Awards. The Music Video Awards, it got our Best Video from a Film nomination for YouTube's Elevation. Teen Choice Awards, Best Choice Drama Action Adventure, and Best Choice Actress nominations. That's all the fun stuff there. On the other side of it got a nominations under the Golden Schmoes Award for Worst Movie of the Year, Biggest Disappointment of the Year, and Best T&A of the Year. Very, very classy for you there. Mm. Angelina Jolie got a nomination for Worst Actress for this and Original Sin from the Razzie Awards. The Stink is Bad Movie Awards was nominated for Worst Screenplay for a film grossing more than $100 million using Hollywood math. And it did win the Worst Foreign Film at the Yoga Awards.
Wow, what a mixture there. And yeah, I think it's even quite interesting. I don't know what the rating of the film was. Just hearing kids' Choice Awards or whatever, you're like, I didn't think kids would be seeing this, but I suppose I don't know what its main audience was. But yeah, a bit of a mixture there. And I suppose I'm sort of from the camp where I remember it being quite popular. I never actually saw it, but the hype in 2001 was quite big around it. I knew so many people that went and saw it. But again, not knowing anything, not again, I haven't actually said, I don't know anything about the video game at all, so I'm sure that would have been a big draw card for a lot of people, especially, you know, around the time, as we've seen, you know, whilst it's not a 90s movie, it was definitely a period where a lot of those video game adaptations were happening.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, certainly, I mean, it was very much hyped up. I mean, not only did you have the, you know, the normal entertainment press going on about it, all the game press at the time were running stories and features about, you know, bringing Lara Croft to life via Angelina Jolie in this movie. So, yeah, it certainly, I think, had a much wider penetration of both film and games audiences at the time. It was really pushed hard. And to give you a bit of an idea, I mean, like, those awards were quite mixed. And when you look, if you move on to our Turkey trivia, when you look at things like the IMDb rating, it actually rated 5.8 out of 10, which is quite high normally for this type of movie. Now, it had a budget of $115 million. It is considered a flop because it only made about $131 million in the US, but it actually ended up grossing about $274 million worldwide.
Oh, wow. And I do remember at the time I was working in Big W Music or Home Entertainment, and I do remember the video or the DVD selling quite well and it being very in high demand. So I wasn't quite aware of it being panned by some people. So, yeah, so it was really interesting when you suggested this movie to look at. So having never really seen past everyone sort of, I think, ogling over Angelina Jolie was a big thing. Like, this is probably, like, I know she'd done movies before this, but this was probably her big breakthrough performance. Like, I think it was from here that you sort of, you know, she became more of a household name.
Yeah, yeah, she did more action, adventure, and a wider range of things as opposed to her earlier, let's just say, borderline softcore pornography movies that I suppose were at the start of her career. So, you know, even though I suppose there may have been a slight nod to that in this movie, if not quite so explicit, we'll get to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it's probably also too the studio seeing, I think it was Paramount Pictures that released this, yeah. It was probably them also seeing her as being a bankable star or somebody that people would go, oh, because it's definitely a man's movie, you know, and I hate to say that, but, you know, it's definitely, oh, you know, it's you know, yeah, they're selling the T and A, let's just say, like the award said.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely there are a number of lingering shots, shall we say, along the way. But then, like, I was talking to just some people I know, and there were quite a few women saying that, you know, at the time, you know, it was, you know, not quite the same scale as, you know, like Wonder Woman, you know, certainly empowered a lot of women and particularly young girls seeing her as a role model. And at the time, Lara Croft Tomb Raider did have a similar, if not quite as large effect. There are a lot of, a lot of people I know out there who were, I suppose, were just at the right developmental stage when this movie came out, and they were very happy to see a female action hero taking the lead.
And that's, like, as I'll say, you know, during the chat too, like, that was really one thing I noticed from the outset is that Angelina Jolie definitely brought the character, yeah, gave the character a lot of power and a lot of, independence, which I think was, yeah, I can understand being very empowering.
Yeah, so, wow, getting deep already.
I didn't think so. This is even before the turkey trivia.
I know, I haven't got to the trivia. Like, for example, Our empowering love. No, I shouldn't say that because it sounds like I'm making fun of her. I'm not making fun of her. But during the filming scenes where Lara is driving the Land Rover through the jungle, apparently there were a lot of reshoots because this was filmed in Cambodia and there were a lot of snakes and other wildlife falling through the open top roof. and basically terrifying Angelina Jolie because you don't know which one of those are venomous.
Oh, definitely. And to put that through an actress, but she seems like she definitely had the... It was a good time in her career. She needed this boost, I think. And yeah, it seemed to have worked all around in that respect. But yeah, I don't want to jump too far ahead.
No.
I mean, in terms of characterization, I think it was a very perfect choice.
Absolutely. I mean, on the flip side, I mean, she did do some of her own stunts. For example, she did do a lot of the bungee ballet that we shall discuss, obviously. But according to an interview, she actually injured her ankle on the first take, and so part of that scene had to be done much later in the shooting because she had to recover. But that was her doing a lot of that bungee ballet stuff. So, you know.
Oh, interesting. And yeah, there's quite a few parts, especially early on in the movie, where we see her doing that. But as you said, we will get to that.
Mm-hmm. It is the 11th highest grossing action film with a woman in the lead role. I didn't think there were that
interesting.
Many. Interesting. Yeah, I'm glad there are that many for it actually to be at that rank.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be interested to know what the other titles are, but that's another podcast.
Absolutely. Now, another familiar face in this movie is Daniel Craig, and he actually, the gun he uses in one of the tombs is a Walther PPK, the signature weapon of James Bond.
Uh-huh. Because I don't remember when the first Bond was, but I think it was mid-2000s. So this was sort of, you know, at his, like, I know he did a lot of movies beforehand, but I think this, yeah, it was a few years off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wielded it again as 007 in Casino Royale, which came out in 2006.
Aha, uh-huh, there we go. So, yeah, we're seeing a bit of an earlier performance there as well from, yeah, another person. And it was interesting seeing even John Voight turn up in the cast as well.
Yeah, I was about to mention that John Voight, Angelina Jolie's real-life father. But interestingly, the picture in the inset of his pocket watch isn't of Angelina Jolie's mother, it's of Linda Carter.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Talking about it, dare I say it again, the word empowering. Mm-hmm. But empowering women, but I don't want to say too much, but yeah, I think having Jean Voight play her actual dad was a nice touch.
Yeah, considering
made sense almost.
Apparently, they don't have the best history, so it was good to see them acting together. Mm. It almost wasn't that star who has been part of the Rufus Project canon now, Catherine Zeta-Jones was considered for the role of Lara Croft.
Ah, interesting. And I suppose it's very similar to the stuff she... Well, we didn't see her do too much in Phantom. And by the way, listeners, listen to the Phantom podcast.
Yes,
I won't say too much more. But yeah, it seemed to be because I think she was doing Zorro and all those other sort of movies at this time. So I could see her doing that. But let's just say Angelina Jolie would have had a very different career if she hadn't done this movie, I think.
Yeah, so it could have been very different indeed. Other people who... actually turned down the role of Lara Croft included, again, another return person, Denise Richards, Charlize Theron, Uma Thurman, and Liv Tyler all turned down the role.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, a few familiar names there from the mm-hmm. Rufus Project.
Absolutely. So, oh boy. so we shall move on. So before obviously we've already started discussing the movie. We can't help ourselves, can we, Christian?
Oh,
but
know.
We need to set a baseline.
Of course.
The aim of the Rufus Project is to see if we can redeem movies. So we need to see what we're working from. So I've grabbed a review from Amazon, and it is simply titled, "You Mean People Like This Movie?" If there was ever a lesson on how not to translate a popular video game series into a movie, it would be Mortal Kombat Annihilation and Tomb Raider. Both movies are B-grade and only good for a Mystery Science Theater 3000 party at midnight. Tomb Raider was torn apart by the critics, and with good reason. It features no coherent plot, mediocre acting, poorly planned action scenes and dialogue so bad it makes an episode of Barney seem like Legacy of Kain. The game is well known for its poor graphics and horrid controls. I guess the same could be said of the movie. And while Angelina doesn't pivot around to change directions, she may as well have. The story of the movie is just as bad. When asked to summarise its plot, a friend of mine said, jiggle, jiggle, splash, splash, jiggle, jiggle. And when pressed further and asked for the moral of the story, he simply replied, kaplowy. I think that pretty much sums it up. While Jolie is beautiful, this film is not. It is overhyped garbage. 1 star.
Oh, there we go. They went into so much detail. I wouldn't put it on the Mystery Science Theater level, but interesting point there. And yeah. It can only go up or sideways from here, but I don't think anything could be that scathing.
Yeah, that was a pretty nasty one. But yeah, you know, look, 96 minutes. That's pretty impressive for this type of movie. I'm used to a lot of these video game adaptations and even comic book adaptations now going a lot longer. So that was nice to see.
Oh, always good to see. And anything over 2 hours usually freaks me out. Actually, just over an hour and a half is good. But I think I even took notice. I know this is the other end of the movie, but there's about 10 minutes of end credits. So when you put when you weigh that up, because from memory, Paramount logo plays and we pretty much get straight into it.
Yeah, no time wasted. Paramount logo plays, there's a little bit of music, big splashy Tomb Raider logo, and then straight into it, and no time wasted on the intro, and no time wasted getting into a nice acrobatic battle sequence in such a fake tomb.
Oh, I know. That's so funny that you say that. Because I watched it with a friend and I saw bits of it. And during this, I went, oh, don't you notice about 90s movies how they feel so studio bound? And then we find out he's pretty much in a simulator or training with these mechanical creatures. But it was definitely a good way to open. It didn't waste any time getting through. And as ignorant as this sounds and as a bit dumb as this sounds, I didn't even think Tomb Raider. Like, I wasn't thinking that whole Indiana Jones Egyptian feel going into this movie. I didn't really know what to think. So as soon as I sort of see this and obviously realise Tomb Raider, duh, I start to think, okay, this is going to be an Indiana Jones type adventure film. So, yeah, I don't know if I was setting myself up for, disappointment in some respects. But, yeah, that's what I was thinking going in, especially with this opening scene.
Yeah. One thing I did notice from the opening scene, there was a combination of, there was a few sections where they had to use practical effects, but a lot of the robot was CGI. And I'm thinking for a 2001 movie, the robot CGI was okay.
I wouldn't have thought it was, I don't know how much CGI was used, but yeah, definitely think it's was good for the time, even though it still had, I have said it in the past when we've looked at these sort of movies, but it still had that 90s feel, in early 2000s, and I definitely think movies have changed quite a lot since this came out, especially in style, but hey, yeah, it was doing the action film at 2001 standard anyway.
it was, and it certainly... certainly enjoyed the late 90s music stylings when Lara puts on her party music after destroying the poor robot. Oh. And to that music started, I was thinking, yeah, you know what, Lara, I don't want to party with you. That's your party mix? No thanks.
Yeah, but I did think it was a pretty cool, it's so easy for us to flip in a USB now with music or something like that, but I did think it was a kind of nice touch how she put that in and it came up, Lara's party mix, but yeah, a sight gag that probably necessarily wasn't my kind of music, yeah, as you were saying.
Yeah, I probably should have looked it up. I'm sorry for my nerd failing, but that big long thing, if you think, sliding an SD card or something into your device now is one thing. Like this card that she slots in was like the length of most people's pinky finger, and it was some proprietary Sony device or whatever. A little bit of product placement there. I think she was plugging into like a Sony, some sort of Sony digital musical player as well. Very subtle, but it was there.
And I think talking about it was there, I couldn't believe how quickly they got into the obligatory, when I say shower scene, when I say obligatory, based on, what I'd heard about this movie, I kind of expected something like this would happen, but not so early on. Any chance to have her train at the start and then get her straight in a shower, that seemed quite the intent of the producers there.
Well, that shower scene was like a, one of those over-the-top hair commercials, the way she was flinging her hair around and pulling the faces and everything. I'm thinking that Yeah, I haven't seen that level of hair flick and facial contortion outside of those just overblown hair commercials you see where they're doing some silky smooth shampoo or whatever.
Oh, well, it's funny because I was, you know, watching this scene going, oh, of course they'd have something like this. You know, they never, like, they wouldn't do a male version. Then we see later on kind of the Daniel Craig equivalent. So, yeah, I thought that was funny that they actually did have that in there as well. And it wasn't just another Angelina Jolie close up.
Yeah, mind you, his didn't go for anywhere near as long, but it was a nice.
It was pretty much her breaking in.
It was a nice parallel, and I mean, at this point, after Lara gets out of the shower, there is a scene with a couple of, I mean, surprisingly tasteful side boob, but you know, it was they weren't covering much. They were covering just enough, I think, to be able to show side boob and keep this PG, and later with Daniel Craig, you know, it's just the very conveniently placed table just high enough to prevent this from jumping to a much higher age rating for a new Daniel Craig. So it was, you know, it was kind of interesting to see that they did do a parallel with a male character. Again, very surprising for a 2001 movie.
It keeps surprising us in media departments. Yes. So, but I mean, yeah, that's probably when the next surprise pretty much came when, you know, when John Voight arriving, because, you know, I wasn't aware going in who else was in it except Angelina. So, yeah, I thought that was, as I said earlier, a really nice touch. And, I think that worked. And it worked well for, you know, flashbacks and things like that too. So
yeah, a little flashback inside some sort of weird jungle tent, and he's like his headstone or whatever is like a concrete version of his tent, which is was okay. That's a very interesting looking. I don't know what that's meant to be, but yeah, good on him.
Because as we find out, like, I was quite confused going into this because of the whole fact that, you know, we find out she's living in, you know, living in this, I suppose, mansion, I suppose you'd call it. But there seems to be a lot of people living out in caravan. Like, you've got the tech guy, what's his name? Bryce, the Noah Taylor character, like him in the caravan outside. And then I think she sleeps in the, I don't know if she does it all the time, but she said she sleeps in the tent. I can't remember what she said.
She sleeps inside. He sleeps in the caravan, but I think she even suggests that, like, that they'd pitch a tent for him inside, but, you know, he doesn't want to.
That's probably what I'm getting confused with.
But yeah, I mean, if we want to touch on that, I mean, like, you mentioned you've got Noah Taylor in this, John Voight, Angelina Jolie, Daniel Craig, Chris Barry, Ian Glenn. He often plays the sort of character he's playing in this movie. For those who know, Julian Ren Tutt as Mr. Pims, yeah, he was quite a familiar face. There were quite a few, you know, familiar faces and known names in this movie.
And yeah, and I think, cause as we said, it was Paramount. I keep thinking it's Warner Brothers, but it was. They were banking a lot, and that's probably where a lot of their budget went. To be honest, paying all these sort of people, or maybe Angelina said, "Dad, I'll rekindle things with you if you do this movie for free." She might not have had that say in it, but
Angelina Jolie and John Voight, two very American actors putting on very English accents, whereas you got Daniel Craig, an actual English actor, and he's. His American accent was interesting over time.
Well, I was like, you know, like I don't know if it's I don't know if you were saying anything against sort of her accent, but I actually think it was I didn't find too many flaws, but I felt like with a lot of these kind of video game movies, a lot of what they say is very much one liners or things here and there. So I didn't really see too many breaks in the accent, but
I mean, back to the movie itself. I mean, when you cut to a scene of a bunch of dudes meeting in a castle during a storm and they start talking about planetary alignments, you can pretty much assume they're the bad guys.
And as you said, how appropriate. Of course, there has to be lightning outside just to add for dramatic effect. But the whole planet alignment thing, it was interesting. I know it ends up being that... the piece of the clock that's inside the artifact, or, you know, yeah, there's like that ticking clock that she ends up finding or whatever. But yeah, I just thought that they would have come up with something a bit more exciting for the piece. But that said, I'm not too sure about the video game and how much of this translated to the, you know, was adapted over. So
yeah, I think this was pretty much an original story, just inspired by the games. But I do like after the whole Illuminati meeting, because it is the Illuminati, as we find out, when they cut back to Lara looking through her telescope at the planets, and she has to explain the entire, like, she explains the whole planetary alignment thing again. That has just been, I mean, at this point, this movie's been fairly light on exposition. Basically, things are happening and they just build on the plot around, which again is so rare for this type of movie. But then they have a situation like this where you have two different characters explain the same thing.
And any time this happens in these kind of movies, it does feel like them trying to flesh out the plot a little bit based on, you know, what limited stuff they had. As you said, you know, it sounds like they've pretty much just got the character and the whole concept of the game and put it in a whole new world.
That was a nice thing, but yeah, when she discovers the hidden room under the stairs that is completely sealed, yet she knows exactly where the light switch is. And she goes to get Bryce out of his caravan. You cut to the inside with Noah Taylor sleeping on his bed, and he's sleeping with all these little robots. And then later on, he's just sitting in the caravan. He's watching this, I don't know what it was. It looked like one of those early British kids shows that tried to be up to date, and there was some weird robot with these weird sound effects going over it and going, oh, what's that? I'm worried about Noah Taylor and his robot obsession in this movie.
They sort that added in as a little bit of a sight gag or something. So, but hey, he had a bit to work with, but, you know, not too much. It seems to be very much Angelina's movie, so maybe he needed to have a few little extra bits for his character.
Yeah, I did like him. He did have a few good lines along the way, and just basically reacting like he's very carefully taking this clock that Lara finds apart and sort of like making note of which screw he took out and where he's putting it and everything like that. And then Lara just comes along with a hammer and smashes to pieces.
But the thing I noticed, you mentioned about the exposition and stuff like that, I noticed the most with this scene in particular when she comes through. I know she's explaining about the clock, but how she just comes in and goes, this clock, it just can't stop ticking. And I just thought, if you stop that right there... You know, I heard going on. I don't know. That just felt like it was, a bit of repetition there. But yeah, it was definitely interesting with the whole planet alignment and then bringing that element in. I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, I do like Bryce himself when Laura says it started ticking. He goes, "How unusual for a clock."
Yeah,
that's good. That's good. I'm glad they just didn't leave that rather different dialogue sitting there. And yeah, so she ends up taking the clock off to some auction, some expert, and she's sitting in the middle of an auction and waves to the expert and goes, "Oh, look, she might have to pay $2.5 million for something. Oh, outbid at the last minute. What a nice gag." And we meet Daniel Craig, and it was weird hearing an American accent from him.
Oh, yeah. It was just weird seeing a younger version of him, because I hadn't really seen him in stuff aside from the Bond movies.
Very true. But that clock expert, oh my God, he had such stilted speech. What a fascinating clock you have bought me, Lara. Just say your lines, dude.
Maybe they felt when they took the 10-minute end credits out, they thought, oh, it's too short. We need to flesh this guy out a little bit more. Have him talk even slower.
Oh, I'm so glad he was just there for, like, one scene and one phone call and we didn't have to see him again, because I was looking... Look, everything else about this movie, really acting-wise, has been fine so far. Why are you coming in with your horrible acting? Seriously, you're bringing the whole thing down, dude.
And as you said, he's not there for long enough, which isn't too bad. But the one thing it just reminded me about her, I suppose her butler, I suppose you'd call him.
Chris Barry.
I thought that, yeah, that's it. I thought that character would have been, I don't know, a bit utilised a bit more. I could sort of kind of been, it could have been a good kind of gimmick having him like a... what's the guy from an Alfred from Batman, something like that. But yeah, we don't really see too much of him except when he comes in and lends a hand when the house gets attacked.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's trying to help. He's trying to get Lara Croft, well, Lady Lara Croft, to be a lady, and trying to get her in dresses and stuff, which he absolutely refuses to get into.
Yeah,
but yeah, but when you're saying when the house gets attacked, and she's doing her her bungee ballet or whatever, I've been thinking, is she doing that to wind down, or is that exercise right at the end of the day? It's just a reason to have her jump up and down and have her shirt flutter so we can see her navel quite clearly, because this movie doesn't use a male gaze at all with any of its camera work. No. But when the soldiers are sneaking in, they go and put something in the door of Bryce's caravan so to lock him in. I'm thinking, why do they bother doing that? Because as soon as he tries to get out, they start shooting him anyway. If they were going to shoot him, why bother locking the door? Why not just go in and shoot him? It's like, that you guys are terrible mercenaries.
And well, they pretty much got what they want. They came for anyway, from memory. So
yeah. I mean, we do get a rather extended sequence of them defending the house, and we get that lovely shot of Chris Barry just very politely and very butlery. Just goes over and puts on his bulletproof jacket and gets his shotgun and cocks it very thoughtfully and looks up and he's like, just nicely done. Even when he's ducking behind pillars, he's doing it so prim and properly, you know. It is a nice touch. For those who don't know Chris Barry, you probably know him better as Rimmer from Red Dwarf.
That still means nothing to me as well. But yeah, it'll mean something to someone, probably know. Yes. Oh, good connection there. So, but look, I think when we find out that, what's his name, Mr. Powell ends up getting the artifact from the guys that break in. But I don't know how we lead to the part, but when she finds the poem in the back of the William Blake book that her father had left.
Yeah.
And when it started to get sort of like this, I'm like, aha, we're going to start, hopefully. You know, as we said, it hasn't been too long of a movie, and it, you know, it wasn't too slow going past, but I got to the point where I'm like, okay, cool, get into the action and adventure. It's been enough now. So I was glad when it kind of felt like it was going to become kind of a treasure hunt type movie.
But that was still strange. I mean, it seemed to be a lot of issue. I mean, obviously, the dad, Richard Croft, played by John Voight, had arranged to have this letter sealed and protected away with some, obviously, you know, highfalutin legal team, to be delivered to Lara on this exact day. So that itself, you know, probably could have just been a letter which explained everything. Yet it had to be a clue to go look in the back of a book for the actual letter which explains everything. And like, when they cut to him writing, talking to her, and dictating all at the same time. And it was just this massive dump of exposition. So, like, these movies are notorious for just having a massive of spoken exposition at the start of the movie, which this one didn't have. But this one lasted almost 40 minutes before someone had to basically sit down and just tell us everything we needed to know before the movie could continue.
Oh, and that was the thing, like, yeah, I think he even says in the letter that, yeah, that I thought, did think that was strange how he's writing it live as she's reading it. But I was going to say, yeah, just the fact that I think even the letter said you were smart being able to work out that it was here and stuff like that, how she actually had to cut the whole book open. And I just think to myself, I don't know how often those books are read, but they might have even been able to get away with just slipping it in. But anyway.
Yeah, again.
It had to be sealed in the cover.
Well, considering, just how convoluted it was getting the clue to her in the first place, it really didn't seem necessary for those extra steps, especially when that led to a mass dump of information. So Lara can then get in contact with the Marines or something that she must have trained with at some time, according to that photo that was on her desk.
Oh, yeah.
So she can have her handy airlift to Cambodia.
Well, as soon as I saw that we were going to Cambodia, I'm like, oh, finally, it's going into this adventure mode. And hey, I think I might have set myself up for it being like an Indiana Jones type movie. But yeah, when I saw that they were traveling, I'm like, oh, cool, the film. Yeah, as I said, it felt very plotting at, even to this stage, even though it hadn't been too much time. So I was glad to... actually, no, I've got it written here. 40 minutes in. Yeah, you were right. 40 minutes in, pretty much, is from the letter to that. So I'm like, yeah, come on, guys. You've only got about 40 minutes left to do anything else.
Absolutely. And yeah, so she gets there. Of course, the tomb is already there with all the bad guys and everyone, the team of locals trying to pull down a statue of something. And I like, they get told to hurry up by the big bad, and Daniel Craig joins in. I'm thinking, oh yeah, Daniel Craig, one more person pulling is going to make all the difference. Oh, it did. Yeah. As soon as he gets in there, it's like two tugs and the door's down, when, like, you know, we've been seeing these people constantly pulling against this door for a good solid 2 minutes at that point.
Yeah, how would they have felt? Yeah, thanks, Daniel, coming in and stealing our thunder.
Why don't you go
in
but at the happy start? That it's gone. Yeah. But of course, Lara finds the secret entrance, which involves her following the laughing of a mysterious, mystical young girl who leads her over leads her to a spot where she just falls down a big pit.
Well, that's the thing. It seemed like a couple of times where, like, I don't know, she's all these little girls that she sees or whatever seem to be helping her along the way. I even noticed it in a scene later on, I think, when they're in the snow. So, But yeah, so as you said, yeah, she pretty much manages to find the entrance to the ruin and gets in there before Pal starts his planetary alignment, I suppose.
Yeah, gets in there in time to find out that Pal's at the wrong spot, and if he basically, I think there was an indication earlier that if people got what he had to do with this clock thing wrong, then everyone would die. So she has to, of course, jump in and interject and up to that point, no one knew she was there. And we get the whole working out the puzzle and saying, okay, well, these giant swords need to go in these slots. And that starts this giant pendulum thing going that's got to pierce an urn with some mysterious liquid in there, but doesn't quite make it. So she jumps on this giant pendulum thing to give it a bit of extra momentum, and, you know, all very nicely put together, I think. I mean, they did kind of, it wasn't just put together slapdash. They you can tell they actually put some consideration into how all this would work.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, like, that I've called it here the piecing mechanism, but you know what I mean. Yeah, I thought it was very clever, and the set was a lot more elaborate than normally they would bother doing with these sort of things. So, yeah, I appreciated that, and it seemed to be those parts, you know, sort of the charm of this movie.
Yeah, and nice foreshadowing when they're looking at all the statues, all these warrior statues around the place, and, like, they give them a good long look. You're thinking, yeah, they're going to come into it, and sure enough, even though they've successfully worked out what to do in order to get this very, very chunky half of a triangle, you've got the whole thing. And I don't know, like, I mentioned the robot being pretty good effects before. I mean, these look like, you know, you look at the old monster movies with their stop-action animation, and to me, these soldiers were very much that style, but I kind of appreciated it. I got a nice nostalgic feel from it.
And, yeah, the thing I appreciated too is it reminded me of a lot, you know, not knowing anything about the game, but it's, you know, something that would have been encountered in the game and how she's fighting. And in many ways, like, I know the game would have used guns, but I don't know, the fact that they're, you know, made out of stone, I thought was funny how they, you know, the guns are supposed to be affecting them. I would have liked to have seen her, I don't know, doing some more kicks and things like that towards them rather than just shooting. But I had to laugh. I don't know what movie came first, but the Resident Evil 2 gun move, that seemed to be used quite a lot. I actually think this might have done it first. I'm sure it's been done heaps of times before, but I just mean that, you know, that real iconic you know, going in for it with two guns in hand.
Yeah, that definitely came from the Tomb Raider thing. Like, right from the outset, that was one of the hallmarks of the Tomb Raider game, was being able to wield the dual pistols and basically jump and somersault and backflip while still firing them. So they certainly made good use of that imagery in this movie.
Definitely, yeah. And, you know, we were saying before about how it was, well, it didn't make its money back, but it sounded like it had quite a decent budget, and they were able to put some very creative stuff together, especially with those set pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if the monsters looked a bit dodgy and cheap, it worked for some reason for me. I don't know.
And you could always just put it down to, hey, it was a video game movie, you know?
Yeah,
bit of fun. Bit of fluff, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, of course, there's all this action. The big giant statue comes to life at some point, and Lara's got to deal with that by using the environment and the big pendulum that's still swinging. She manages to ram that into the big statue that can't be stopped before running away and jumping over a waterfall.
Because that's right.
That's what you do. But I did like when she... we don't know where she got the boat from, but she manages to paddle into this nearby town. I assume it's nearby, and meets up with this monk.
The texts are in. Yep.
Yeah, this monastery full of dudes, yet they happen to have a robe which fits her perfectly, and quite fetchingly, funnily enough. And then I know we've already had some taste of the mystical with some of the stuff involved when the clock and those statues come into life, but the magical mystical healing tea that just completely healed her arm, so there wasn't even a mark there anymore. Again, okay, that's a thing.
Yeah, and wouldn't you think, you're thinking, monks, I think you're onto something good here that other people could use as well. So you're keeping that well hidden, but yeah, I thought it was quite... very instant. I wasn't expecting it to be like that, but yeah, I thought, and the typical thing, like with this sort of, with anything medicinal, like oh, it tastes terrible, but it's very good for you.
I mean, she gets the hands on a phone. I also liked how the satellite phone only worked because a monk had to stand there and physically hold a satellite dish pointing towards the sky. So she can make her phone calls.
I mean, it was an interesting sight gag. And even just the look on his face of, you know, oh, come on.
Yeah, but when she makes one phone call and then makes another phone call, and he's just, oh.
Oh, but because I think that was the part I was confused about, is she'd just seen that, oh, I suppose time's passed. I was just thinking she'd just seen that Mr. Powell and the bad guys, and she's next thing. She wants to make an international call to him, and I'm thinking, you were just with him. Like, he can't be international, but yeah, I'm assuming a bit of time has passed.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got her clock, and she's got his piece of the magic mystical triangle. I'll just call it that. I can't remember what it was called. It's a magic mystical triangle. So, you know, she wants her clock back, and he wants his triangle back, so they kind of got to arrange something to meet up. And wouldn't you know it, they meet up in the Illuminati. I can't say it. Illuminati castle that we see from earlier, and so like Lara just has a great time, sort of saying, "Who sits in this one?" Pointing to the big seat. It's not you, is it? No.
She wouldn't let it go, would she? Like, and you just keep talking,
and then she goes and sits in it. Just, you know. Obviously, just to show a nice bit of disrespect. I guess, you know, these little touches, like, you know, it wasn't blatant, but, you know, it was, you could tell she was doing it deliberately in order to goad him without blatantly saying, I'm going to do this to annoy you.
And it's just like another part of that whole, the whole character, the movie character, Lara Croft, just making her, you know, fierce and, you know, yeah, another example of that, of course.
They come to their deal, and then she manages to bring Bryce along. Not too sure why Bryce has to come along with her on this trip to Siberia or whatever. But
yeah, I think even at one stage someone says, not blatantly, you know, you don't need to be here, but, you know, like, you just should have come on your own or something like that. So, yeah, his inclusion, hey, maybe they felt he needed to be in the movie a little bit more. And then most of the time it was him in the plane whinging that his ass has gone to bed, gone to sleep.
Yeah, nice little bum joke to break them. I mean, they're all glaring at each other, and then he suddenly goes, the left side of my bum's gone to sleep. Just to It's
yeah, completely random.
Just breaks attention. But I think the only reason he was there was so he could have some fancy bit of equipment that's tracking their progress across Siberia or whatever, and they get to this dead zone, which is why they can't fly there, and they have this thing of going from helicopters to these big amphibious vehicles through to finally having dog sleds to get to where they're going. And I think the only reason he's there is so they can have a scene where he hits this bit of tech when it stops working.
Oh, yeah. And it's like... sorry, you just reminded me about the bobsledding out at the end, but we'll get to that. Again, oh, yes. Another... I don't know. I remember the... Like, I know in the movie she wears a lot of the sort of skimpy outfits, but I think when she does it, when she eventually wear the full sort of grey outfit, that's probably more, I think, the video game sort of look. I don't know.
Now, the video game look was really what you saw in the opening scene. The shorts and the tight shirt, that's the Lara Croft from the video games. And I think they just had that at the start to just get the look out of the way almost. Because
so they can,
it's not very practical for, you know, bobsledding through Siberia.
I'm surprised the producers didn't try, especially with the supposed male gaze. But anyway, I'm glad they didn't, actually.
Oh, they still made sure they got plenty of shots of the curves. Didn't matter what she was wearing. Anyway, but like, another thing, just for sheer, I don't know why, when they get to this this area and she finds this bell that she rings to open this icy door. I mean, the ice couldn't just crumble. It had to, like, full-on explode outwards on everyone. And again, for no reason. There was nothing behind it. It just basically cracked and then just blew outwards, so everyone would have to cover themselves in the shower of ice.
It's like whatever set, whatever things they had for the special effects on that day. We'll just use that.
Yeah. And again, we get inside and they've got this other big convoluted puzzle to work out, and they send the soldiers on this thing with moving arms to try to find a way in or whatever. And those soldiers were so useless. I mean, they couldn't, like, you know, they were being hit and squished and pushed and all sorts of horrible things are happening to them. But when Lara Croft and Daniel Craig, I can't remember his character's name, Alex West,
I was going to say, I've got that note.
You know, I mean, there's a couple of close calls, but they have no issues with climbing around the big spinning contraption thing to get to where they need to be.
That's like kind of like we were saying earlier with the guys pulling on the ropes. It's like as soon as Daniel Craig comes, oh, everything seems to be all right.
Yeah. So the only two competent people in this movie are Angelina Jolie and Daniel Craig.
There you go. So maybe it was saying something about their future film careers. I don't know.
Who knows?
But as you said, we're at the room of spinning balls, you know, the whole planets and all that kind of thing. So, and this is where we started to see stuff that we hadn't sort of seen earlier with a lot of those sort of lightning CGI kind of tacky B-grade effects that would come through every now and then.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this movie, I suppose, had touches of mystical and, I suppose, magical type of stuff in the lead up. I mean, there was a little bit of that in the previous one with all the statues coming to life and all sort of fun stuff. But this one has full on time storms. Anything that passes through them kind of gets separated into its component bits and comes out safe through the other side, because they have a dog jump through one of these things. And in order to when they get the other half of the magical mystical triangle, there's still a piece missing. And so Lara throws her clock into one of these time storm things to get this one piece. But yet when she reaches in to get the piece, her hand's fine.
Yeah, everything's all good. But, it was around this time where finally you're thinking, well, you know, because, you know, it hadn't plotted too long, but, you know, the movie had gone by quite fast. But you're thinking to yourself, okay, guys, you're running out of time to have a really big action sequence of some kind.
Yeah, and like, they kind of have, I don't know, they get the triangle together, then there's this really odd scene where Lara and Powell end up in some sort of other place, and they're running up the side of a pyramid in order to get to the triangle up top, and Lara gets there first, and Powell apparently falls to his death in the darkness. Then we get a nice thing between Angelina and John Voight, where, you know, he's explaining to her her destiny to destroy it or whatever it was.
And she's so mad that he hasn't told her about being in the Illuminati, pretty much.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And he, you know, and when she says, oh, I can use it to bring you back, he goes, oh, no, no, you mustn't change time at all. And the first thing she does when she gets, well, the first thing she does once she gets back to the real world is, we didn't mention it earlier, when Daniel Craig got stabbed and chucked in the water and apparently drowned, the first thing she does when she gets back is changes time so that she can intercept the knife and turn it around to stab Pal, who apparently dies from the stabbing. But then, no, when they have to escape and everything's exploding after she destroys the triangle, nope, that's when he's still perfectly fine and they have to have the big fight scene.
Which I actually like. I'm not really into sort of fight sequences and stuff, but I really thought that worked well. I was glad to not see the guns and just see a good old fist fight between the two of them. I actually, it was one of those times where I wished the sequence had gone on a little bit longer, actually, because that kind of felt to me like the big action bit. But as you said, it sort of feels like Pal never dies by this stage.
It's like, third time lucky? Okay, good.
I did think it was kind of cool how she turned the knife around, and it's funny because we were talking about earlier about how her hand's fine. I never saw her hands again after the knife, so I'm sure the blood didn't last on there too long. But yeah. It was a kind of cool thing. But yeah, you're like, just die already.
Yeah, I think you do see, like, they did have enough to, so like during that fight scene, you sort of can see that she's got blood running down her arms from where
I'm glad continuity didn't forget about that.
Yeah. So, you know, this movie, again, for this type of movie at this time, had surprisingly good continuity and surprisingly, you know, surprisingly good choices made along the way, you know.
Yeah, definitely. But I just wish that fight had gone a little bit longer. I don't know. For some reason, I know it's more about the guns with the video game, but I don't know. I just thought the when anything without guns was, you know, used, it was kind of cool choice.
Yeah, it certainly made it a bit more exciting and dynamic. But it couldn't go for too long because the place was exploding and she had to make her dramatic flamboyant escape that you were mentioning earlier.
Oh my gosh, I think the person I was watching it with had sort of zoned out by now, but I'm like, hey, check this out. I don't know, there's just something about seeing her bobsledding. I'm like, this even feels like perhaps it could have been in the video game, but then I'm like, maybe not.
Oh, you forgot to mention that she comes across this dog sled team and the sled has been crushed, so she's barefoot bobsledding behind the dogs through these caves as rocks and everything fall around her.
But everything still seems so perfect.
But she's having a great time. She's doing it. She's got this huge smile on her face. It's looking, you're about to die here.
Why are you so frostbite on your bloody feet? Like,
oh, she had a big boots on, I suppose. But
oh, sorry, still, yeah,
but you know, like, no sled.
So yeah. Oh yeah, I thought it was so strange, but then it's one of those, you never know with these sort of movies, or most movies, you know, like whether they need to sort of just finish there or have a little extra scene. But yeah, it's got that last little bit, I think, from then on, where she sort of pays her respects to the father, and I like how it was kind of cyclic?
Yeah, that works, yeah.
With the movie in terms of it sort of finishing the way it started. Yeah. With her sort of practicing. I don't know, it gave the feeling a lot that they were setting up for a sequel just when she grabbed the guns off the tray. I don't know. Yeah.
But, I mean, it was quite nice, like, when she comes out to... Because she... Oh, yeah, sorry, Pal had the locket with the picture of her mother in it, and when she comes out to lay it on his memorial, because they never found his body, she's there in the dress that she refused to put on for the butler earlier in the movie, and then to get through, and the butler's there with his silver tray with a cloth over it, and oh look, there's her guns and there's the robot, and then we have the closing credits to a couple of solid late 90s, early 2000s hits.
I do love, I'm a bit of a fan of Basement Jacks, Where's Your Head At? It just took me back to 2001, actually, because when this movie came out and when I was working in music at Big W. But and then I think Elevation, as I think you mentioned earlier, won an award. I remember, not as a big hit, but I do remember this, the album around the time. I think it was Electrical Storm, maybe the something album. But anyway, like quite. Or You Can Leave Behind. Anyway, I don't know offhand, but it was from a big U2 album around that time. So yeah, it was good hearing stuff like that. And then a song at the end, which I'm going to have to ask if you. I thought it was Firestarter, but then I looked at the end credits. I think it would have just been one of those other sort of.
Yeah, I think it was Lara's Party one. Mix again, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I was thinking, I don't think that's Firestarter, yeah. But it was very similar in sound anyway. So, yeah, kind of made the. I think I even clocked it in. The end credits were, 10 minutes. I couldn't believe it. 10 or 11 minutes. I'm like, enough already, but at least they gave us some okay songs to listen to.
Yeah, actually, so some decent music at the end of one of these movies for a change. I appreciated it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and it definitely showed its era. It's the year it came out, I think. So, and I think that's even what you see the whole way through this movie. It feels very much of its time, which isn't a bad thing, I don't think.
Yeah. So, I think we have made it to the end of the movie, Christian.
Woo. Interesting. Whoa.
And I guess that means we need to work out if this movie is redeemable. Now, I did choose it. So please, Christian, let me know your redeeming or otherwise features and if this movie is redeemable.
Well, I've had to try and let a little bit, hold back a little bit so I didn't reveal too much too early. But this is one of those movies that, it's been on the cusp most of the time for me. I really liked the Lara Croft character, and and a lot obviously to do with Angelina Jolie. But I think the way that they've written the character is very strong and fierce, and yeah, I really appreciated that. So that was a lot going for it, and considering she pretty much has to hold the movie together, that was a good choice. It had the makings of being a real action type movie. I kind of was expecting a bit more of an Indiana Jones movie, and I think the whole Egyptology angle of it, or the archaeology angle of it, was probably underutilized. But again, we're talking about a video game adaptation. It's usually, in most cases, going to be too slight, and I think that's happened a lot with this as well. The good thing is they keep changing location. You're in the jungle in Cambodia, next thing you're in Russia, then next thing you're and on the bobsleds and all that. So at least it kept the scenery fresh. And and look, I was going to say, when they say whenever you talk about cinematography, it means the movie must be pretty bad. But I will point out that the cinematography and the shots and different set pieces were quite attractive and good to look at. So, and very clever sets, as we mentioned earlier, with that piercing mechanism that she used in the tomb. But so I was on the cusp for most of this. But the more I think back on it, time managed to go by pretty fast with this. I didn't really look at my watch once at all, and it was still mildly entertaining, and I was impressed with what they got out of the game by taking something that doesn't have a plot and giving it a plot. So it is on the cusp, but Trevor, I'm actually going to redeem this movie.
Ooh, just got there, hey?
Just, but it's definitely on the R side, not the IR side.
Oh, there we go.
Hopefully we'll see how we go.
What I can do. Look, this movie, it's got a healthy dose of cheese, and it does take a bit of a sharp turn into Bonkers Town during the finale, which kind of, it starts off very much set in the real world with guns and robots, and then gets overly mystical towards the end, which kind of makes it a bit odd along the way. The acting, look, most of the acting was decent, even though we had our horribly stilted clock expert. Daniel Craig's accent, though, I could not get used to that. It was in a class of its own. Certainly, it doesn't get too bogged down, and a lot of the action, particularly when not so much the gunplay, but when they're working things out, or they're solving puzzles, or even just Lara riding on a motorbike through a city, they keep the action up pretty high and fast. As you mentioned, Lara herself is a very solid character and very well put together in this movie, and you can certainly see how that character could easily have been a role model at the time. It was solid and very, very good. This movie managed to stay enjoyable. Don't take the mistake of taking it too seriously. But, I think it's certainly worth a watch. And I really did enjoy watching it. And I would say this movie is not borderline. It is definitely redeemable.
Aha, there we go. Oh, I think it's actually been a while since we've both agreed on something.
Well, we both well, both agreed on a redeemable. I think we've had a few agreements on the other side.
Yes, more recently, I mean.
Fantastic. Well, I always love it when we get a redeemable at the end. Now, I do have a couple of extra opinions. As usual, I do put the question out there for anyone who would like to have their say. Now, Clayton, I actually chatted to him about it the other day, and he said that the best thing about this movie is the poster. Now, Susie, who you may well know from What the History, get the plug in, as always, she said that she loves this movie, and Angelina as an English lady is great.
There we go. So, yeah, it does have its fans. Well, definitely on our side of the fence anyway.
Absolutely, and it has its big fans as well. I mean, we redeemed it. Everything seems nice and positive, but this movie has its big, big fans. So I do like to finish on a nice positive review, just to round things out on a nice high note. This one is titled, One of My Favorites. One of my favorite movies from Miss Jolie. She's having fun. The script is a non-stop and quite amusing ride. The characters are well written, well acted, and the whole thing is a real hoot. If you're looking for a fun time at the movies, this one and its partner, i.e. the sequel, are just great. 5 stars.
Well, there we go. And honestly, Trevor, it was worth hearing you just say hoot the way you did. You definitely gave that review some good expression. So, but yeah, so we definitely seem, you know, from what I've seen and what I've heard from tonight, there's quite a lot of fans for this movie, and more so than the detractors, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't hesitate in saying check out this movie, but that's just me. So, Christian, now we do need to talk a little bit about the next episode, but we will come back to that. So we have redeemed this movie, Christian. So we need to know, though, what movie are you going to subject me to for the next time we chat?
Well, just reading at the title on my page here, I'm like, maybe subject is the word. Again, I'm not too sure. I'm going in completely blind. This is actually, I can't think offhand who did suggest it, so I do apologise if you're listening and I can't name you by name. But someone did recommend this to me when we first started the podcast. So it's been a while, and I think I sort of put it in the, let's just say, when you say the name of the movie, you would put this in the, oh, you wouldn't do that basket. But I think it's, you know, it's kind of something we should look at, and I opened my list up and I thought, oh look, this stood out to me as something that probably more interest sake to see than anything else, and what the hell are they going to do with this movie? So it's a low budget movie, so it's already promoted as that, so it's interesting going through, but we're actually going a bit more forward for someone like me normally has, but 2010.
Ooh.
So this, I believe, may have been it would have been a director DVD, but yeah, so I will not take full responsibility for this because it was a suggestion, but I think it's time to look at Titanic 2.
Oh, I have heard about this movie. I have even seen the trailer. But I certainly, it wasn't on my list to check this out. So Titanic 2.
So I'll say that was a recommendation 100% rather than making me be the one that chose it. But, so I thought more than interest's sake. I think I heard something about the Titanic gets hit by a meteor and something. I don't know. I don't want to say too much, but I think it's a bit of a different movie than what you think it's going to be.
Fair enough. Well, I've had a quick peek at the options for watching this. Titanic 2, 100 years later, lightning strikes twice. this is actually watchable on a service called Tubi TV, T-U-B-I. I haven't heard of that. It's the only option for watching in Australia, apparently. It's got ads, that's what it's telling me. So if you do want to watch this, you can watch this for free before we get back to discuss Titanic 2.
Interesting choice, huh?
Yes. Now, you're also going to have a little bit of time to watch Titanic 2. Christian, a lucky person, is actually going on a bit of an adventure very, very soon. So there's going to be a few episodes before Christian is back to discuss Titanic 2. So I am currently lining up a few special episodes with special guests covering, I think, covering a few more specialty movies that Christian may not necessarily want to be involved with. One of them is probably going to be the Doctor Who movie that was released with Paul McGann. If you're aware of that one, now I know that Christian has no interest in Doctor Who, so I wasn't going to subject him to that one, so it seems like a good time to do that. But if you keep an eye on the Rufus Project Facebook page, that's probably going to be the best place to get updates, so you know what's happening in the upcoming specials, I suppose you could call them.
Definitely, and this is normally the time when I know you usually ask me what I've got going on, but as I'm going away, I don't really have any events to promote at the moment, but definitely head to christianfletcher.com for the list of things for when I get back.
Absolutely, and look, while you're on the Rufus Project Facebook page, or the Rufus Project on Twitter, there's more updates of stuff that comes out rather than stuff that we're actually coming up. You can also check out the What the History podcast I mentioned earlier that I do with my wife Susie. A couple of bits of bizarre history are discussed every fortnight on that one. It's good fun. And there's also the Rufus Project YouTube channel where we are... I'm trying a few new things. I've actually started doing the One Credit Challenge as a live event, so if you keep an eye on our Facebook page or our YouTube channel, you'll get announcements about when the next one of those is coming out, and I've got all sorts of fun plans that hopefully will come to fruition soon, so I won't discuss more about them just yet.
Fantastic. So just, yeah, anticipation's good. You'll have to wait and hear.
Absolutely. Now, if you have any comments on Titanic 2, or if you think we've been too harsh or too generous on Tomb Raider, or sorry, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, must specify, you can also head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, to leave a comment below this very episode, or you can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. We would love to hear from you.
Fantastic. So looking forward to chatting when I get back. I don't know if the movie will be any good, but at least we know the chats always are.
Oh, these chats are so good. I'm very happy that before you have your little break that we managed to go out on a redeemable, on a video game movie, less.
Who'd have thought?
It's just amazing.
Oh, I'm so happy. Yeah, it's about time I redeemed something. I've been a bit grumpy recently with everything, so I'm glad we found something to get me over the line.
Woo! Excellent. So I'll convert you and I'll turn you into a nerd yet, Christian.
You've got time.
Excellent.
Well, it hasn't happened with four or five seasons yet, so never know. It'll have to happen.
Absolutely. So yeah, I think on that note, we should wrap things up. Thank you very much, Christian, for joining me as always. This has been an absolute hoot.
Thanks so much for having me, Trevor, and I look forward to chatting Titanic 2. We'll see how we go.
Absolutely. See you later.
I'd like to thank all of you for joining me on this day that'll go down in this nation's history. A day where the lives lost on board this ship's predecessor were remembered with the creation of the greatest, fastest, most sophisticated ship ever created, the Titanic 2.
Let's make history.
Have another one of your bad buildings, Captain?
Oh, you could say that.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If I could have your attention, please.
Thank you.
bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the B, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.